17. Pirates and Teams. The front of her Mondrian haircut had started to remind her of Bobby Chambo's elephantitis of the forelock, the result of an ongoing interaction of product with particulates. Whatever the stylist had applied had by now sucked in every molecule of the brew that was the air of the L.A. basin, plus however many cigarettes Bobby Chambo had recently smoked in her immediate vicinity. None of this looks very good, she thought, meaning not so much the generally poor appearance she felt she was able to muster to meet her new employer, but the overall arc and apparent direction of her life so far. Everything, right that minute, down to Chambo and his gridded floor. Chambo, afraid to sleep in the same grid square twice. But still, lip gloss, earrings, top and skirt and hose from the worse-for-wear Barney's bag she was using to separate dress-up from workaday. For a purse, she chose one of her black makeup bags, dumped it, refilled it minimally. The shoes from the dress-up bag were mutant black ballet slippers by a Catalan designer long since gone into some other field. Out of here, she told the woman in the mirror, once again ignoring the video art in the elevator. The door opened on the buzz and tinkle of Stark's lobby in late-evening bar mode. A brown-haired bellman in trademark pale suit stood centered in the projected faux Islamic squiggles of the carpet of light device, smiling mightily in her direction. This functionary's teeth, illuminated by the accidental fall of a single sunny squiggle, were presented with billboard clarity. As she approached him, scanning for her Belgian advertising magnate, the smile increased in both width and magnitude, till, as she was about to pass, the luxurious tones last heard on her cell emerged, startling her. Miss Henry, Hubertus Bigend. Instead of screaming, she took his hand, finding it firm, dry, and of a neutral temperature. He squeezed hers lightly in return, his smile expanding still further.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Bigend. Hubertus, he insisted. Please.
Are you finding the hotel satisfactory?
Yes, thanks.
What she'd taken for a Mondrian doorman's suit was crisp beige wool. His sky blue shirt was open at the collar.
Shall we try Skybar?
He asked, consulting a watch the size of a small ashtray.
Unless you'd prefer something here.
He indicated the high, narrow, surrealistically long alabaster table atop some number of tall, biomorphic Stark legs that was the lobby bar. There's safety in numbers, said an inner voice that wanted to stay right here, have the required drink and the absolute polite minimum of talk.
Skybar,
she opted, not certain why, but recalling that it might well be impossible to get in, let alone get a table. As he led her toward the pool and the shed-sized flower pots, each with its ficus tree, she recalled fragments from the last few times she'd been here, at the end of and just after the curfew's official cessation. People who didn't know the music industry, Inchmail said, believed that the movie business was the ne plus ultra of vicious, asshole-chewing, hyena-like behavior. They passed a Brobdingnagian futon, in whose squishy depths a covey of vicious, asshole-chewing, hyena-like, and exceptionally pretty young people reclined with their drinks. But you don't know that about them, she reminded herself. It was just that they looked like A&R people. But then almost everyone here did. He led her past the bouncer as though the bouncer weren't there. Indeed, the blue-toothed bouncer was hard-pressed to get out of Big End's way in time, so thoroughly did it seem that Big End was unaccustomed to anyone being in his way. The bar was packed, as she remembered it having always been, but he had no trouble getting them a table. Looking broad, bright-eyed, and, she supposed, Belgian, he held her heavy, library-style oak chair for her.
I was quite a fan of the curfew, he said to her ear.
And a huge goth altogether, I'll bet, she resisted replying.
The idea of a baby Belgian advertising magnate raising his bick in some darkened curfew concert was best left unexamined. These days, according to Inchmail, they raised their cell phones, and the screens gave out quite a startling amount of light.
Thank you, she said,
leaving it ambiguous as to whether she was thanking him for having told her he'd liked the curfew or for having held her chair. Seated opposite her now, beige elbows on the table, manicured fingers steepled in front of him, he was managing a good approximation of the look she was given by male Hollis Henry aficionados, who were actually seeing some private inner version of Anton Corbijn's portrait of her, the one in the deconstructed tweed miniskirt.